there is a Darius Rucker song called It Won't Be Like This For Long. Mm-hmm. And that song plays in my head almost every single day. Everything is a phase. And whatever you're going through, and I think that's kind of like a life lesson. Whatever you're going through is a phase. And it's especially with kids, it's not going to last long. Think about it. You only get 18 years, which seems like a long time, but it's really not. They say the nights are long and the years are short.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That's never been more true in my life.
Welcome to Dadsplaining, a weekly chronicle of all the weirdest, messiest, grossest, and funniest parts of fatherhood hosted by two first-time dads. I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon.
And this morning, or rather today, we've got a very special treat for you guys. We are going to be speaking with Charlie Morgan, who, if you're in Atlanta, you already know who she is. She is the midday host on B98.5, and she's going to be speaking with us about her pregnancy experiences, one of which was in vitro fertilization, something that Brandon and I really know nothing about. So it's going to be a very educational episode for us, as well as hopefully for you guys. And we're going to have some fun with it. But before we get into all of that, Brandon, if our listeners want to reach out to us with questions, comments, if they'd like to come on the show, where can they find us?
Please give us a like or a follow on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Dadsplaining Podcast. You can send us an email directly, dadsplainingpodcast@gmail.com, and then you can catch this and every episode anywhere you get your podcasts.
That's right. We publish new episodes every Monday morning. Please be sure to subscribe. Leave us a rating and a review on iTunes, please. We've got a small batch of those that have already been left for us, and we're very grateful and proud of all of those. So please keep them coming. We appreciate you guys so much. Before we get into the interview today, Brandon, what is new with Noah?
Well, just kind of been pretty casual, calm, good, run-of-the-mill time lately, but just kind of a funny, what ultimately ended up being a cute anecdote. You know, last night I was putting my son to bed and, kind of the usual turning, rolling, always needing a little bit more. For my son, it's always needs more water, so I keep the water cup adjacent and I go back in 1, 2, 3, 4 times, however long it takes. Usually just once is enough for him. Last night, a little extra on the third go, you're starting to go into the deep end as a parent where you're like, oh God, what's wrong? Is this going to be my whole night? Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to check off the list of what's going on. I have no idea. So I actually just asked him, probably because I was a little frustrated at a certain point of, what's going on, buddy? And I was like, are your ears bothering you? And he just said, uh-huh.
That's
awesome. Just looks at me and he was just like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, I can't believe it. So I'm just like, well, strike twice. Let's try this again. So I said, do you want me to give you some medicine to make your ears feel better? And he goes, uh-huh. I'm like, I can't believe this is amazing. Yeah. I have no idea if he thinks I've asked him if he wants cookies or if he wants medicine.
Right.
I'm just going to assume he knows at this point because it's easier on me. So I just grab him, give him the little eardrops. He was totally chill about it. He just kind of accepted it, and then he kind of settled down in my arms and went to sleep. So no idea. It was just kind of a cool moment. It's always just nice when you kind of feel like you can almost communicate with him a little bit. And the idea that he has a concept of what medicine is.
That's
and
awesome.
His self, presence or whatever. I don't know. It was just kind of, it was really interesting and certainly helps you feel a little bit better after, spending an hour putting a kid to bed.
Totally. I had an interesting nighttime experience myself last night. So David, we're in the potty training phase right now, which is a challenge, but I'll get more into that on other episodes. But he has a routine where he'll sit on the potty and he'll read his book. He has 3 books that he goes through every time. The same 3 books every time.
We all do when we use the
bathroom. Exactly, right? Except with adults, it's our phones and our Facebook feed. But anyway, I've also mentioned in previous episodes that my son is, for some reason, obsessed with the theme song to The West Wing, probably because my wife and
we all would be.
Of course, yeah. I mean, President Bartlett, 2020.
There's nothing more patriotic.
But my wife and I binged it a lot in his first, year or two of life. So he hears it, he just, immediately interested. So last night I'm upstairs with him sitting, he's sitting on the potty. My wife's downstairs. She turns on The West Wing on Netflix.
Oh,
the theme song comes on. He's in the middle of reading his favorite book. Yep. He looks up. He hops off the toilet completely naked, runs down the hall to the stairs. I'm running after him because I don't want him to fall down the stairs. He turns to me. He wants me to pick him up, carry him downstairs to watch the theme song to The West Wing.
Perfect.
In the middle of potty time before bed. My wife and I are like, oh my God, what have we created?
A brilliant child.
A brilliant child who's going to have excellent taste in television.
There
that's what.
Go.
So on to this week's topic. As I mentioned, we have a special guest today. Good morning, Charlie. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're doing great. We're glad to have you in here. So a little bit more introduction. Charlie and I have worked together here at Cox Media Group Atlanta for a few years. I've mentioned in previous episodes that I've been to Disney World a few times for work. Each of those times, Charlie has been with me as the host for B98.5. doing interviews and things like that. And Charlie, I mentioned that because I want to have you back in a future episode just to talk Disney, because Charlie is like the Disney World Sherpa. She knows more about it than most of the Disney World employees that we've spoken with.
That's actually very true.
So, you know, there's plenty to talk about there.
Yeah.
But today we are going to have our first conversation with you about the pregnancy journey. Brandon and I both experienced kind of your sort of more typical pregnancy experiences, and you know, outside of our own experiences, we don't have a lot of knowledge. But Charlie, I know that your first pregnancy was through IVF, and that's something that we've never talked about on the podcast before. But I'm sure that at least some of our listeners have had an experience with, or are, you know, thinking about that as their next steps. So, you know, we're happy to have you on here, and we're sure we're going to learn a lot. So I want to start kind of at the very beginning. When did you and your husband kind of decide you were ready to have a baby, and kind of how did that process start?
It was fall of 2013 was pretty much when we decided, like, we've been married for a little over 2 years. Like, I think we're ready. And there, without going into too much detail, which I can go in all kinds of details.
All like
our dinner
details.
Conversations, I have no filter when it comes to this, just because it's I was so into it for so long.
And feel free
long.
To talk about, you know, as detailed as you're comfortable, because this is something that our listeners can learn from.
Okay, good. Yeah. So this, we'll just go ahead and throw a little PG, maybe even like PG-13 rating on some of this. Okay. So, in fall of 2013, we decided we're ready to start having a family. I had taken some ovulation tests, never getting like a positive sign. I was like, well, that's a little odd. Yeah. So I did what any good person does in the 21st century and went online and Googled, what does that mean? And noticed as I was reading a couple of things, I had more and more symptoms of something called endometriosis or PID, which is pelvic inflammatory disorder. So thought, that's a little odd. I'm very young. I'm like 23, 24. I was like, there's
still only
no.
25.
I was like, yeah, there's no way I am anywhere near that. It's fine. So I made an appointment with my doctor, my OBGYN, who I had gone to from the time I was 16 until, you know, this point. She was like, honey, you're young. You need to relax. I'm like, telling her these symptoms. She does an exam. She's like, well, I see a little bit. I see kind of what you're talking about, but I think you just need to relax. Okay, not what I want to hear. My husband is over 30. Like, I'm, you know, we're not getting any younger at this point.
Right.
So I said thanks. Took her cup. She said the first step of we do anything is a male sample, and we test it. We look at it, that kind of thing. So I was like, okay, thanks. I'll take that. Not feeling very confident in her and her trust of like a woman's intuition with what's going on with her body. So asked some friends about recommendations for another OBGYN and found one. She was absolutely wonderful. Did an ultrasound. She's like, I can kind of see some circles, some lining around your ovaries. Could just be your normal cyst, but let's take a look at it. Over the course of months, this lining was still there, which if it was a normal cyst, normally when you have your period, the cyst explodes, I guess you could say, for lack of a better word, and the egg is released and you know what happens there.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was not happening. I was constantly having that, which would explain why I was never getting a positive ovulation test, because even though I was ovulating, there was no egg present.
Right.
That kind of was a downer for a little bit there. The first step, they don't just say, okay, well, good luck. Go to, you know, you're going to go get IVF.
Sure.
IVF is like the end all kind of be all. It is known for being very invasive, very expensive. I did not know anything about it, except it was very invasive and it was very expensive. And I did not want to go down that path. There are plenty of other things to do before you get there. There is a drug, it's called Clomid. And basically, it makes you hyperovulate. So instead of releasing one egg, your body your ovaries will grow more follicles. So you will release more eggs. it's I kind of akined it to I was a chicken laying eggs for a while.
Yeah, more opportunities.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. You're not going to come out Octomom more than likely, because if you're if you're doing this, you obviously have a problem getting pregnant. So it just gives you more opportunity, like you said. You can only do that for a very short term. Because of the side effects, it is very invasive on your body, and what it does, it messes with your hormones, it causes hot flashes, mood swings. If you just go on Google and you Google Clomid side effects memes, you will see.
There are
support groups for everything, and I didn't realize this until I was kind of knee deep in the Clomid. But we did 6 cycles, which was 6 months of Clomid, and my doctor, like I said, was still noticing those little rings around my ovaries. At that point, she's like, I kind of want to go in and see what we're looking at. So I had laparoscopic surgery. So I have 2 little scars and then a camera through my belly button. And it was, we scheduled it so it was over Labor Day. So we are in fall of 2014 now. And there are 2 little scars I have, like I said. The surgery is pretty invasive. I was in bed for a couple of days, and I was out of work for a week. As I was reading online, like any good person does, from what I read, they go in, if they find what they thought they would find, which was endometriosis, they burn it off, you're good to go. Most people get pregnant the next cycle after. So I was very excited to have this surgery done. I was like, this is what's holding me back. Had the surgery, everything was good, I thought. Went and had the staples removed, and my doctor's like, so have you thought anything about what we talked about? So what did we talk about? Apparently, whenever I came out of recovery, the doctor explained to my husband and my mother, who were there, that it was much worse than they thought it was. It was actually what they classify as stage 4, almost stage 5 endometriosis. If you think about, you have like your uterus and then fallopian tubes and 2 ovaries. So it kind of looks like 2 candy canes put together.
Right.
Mine was more or less a ball. The skin had kind of grown around my uterus, fallopian tubes, ovaries, and made it into a ball. Endometriosis is caused when you have tissue, when you have your period, it's supposed to go out. It's when it kind of goes backwards, and it kind of grew everything together. So they burned off what they could. She's like, we did what we could. It doesn't look great. You need to see a specialist. This is the one. She gave me some paperwork. This is the one that we recommend. And I had looked at the name, and I immediately recognized them. I've had friends that have used them. And their track record, even though I knew nothing about like IVF, was already in my head of these guys are the best of the best. I'm kind of like talking over a lot of your questions.
No, that's okay. I mean, that takes us, I mean, that covers a lot of the questions that I sent you kind of ahead of time, which is fine because you're just naturally kind of telling the story the way it unfolded. So you're at that point, you find the doctor that's going to take you through that process. What kind of happens next?
We met with, you do a consultation with the doctor to make sure you're a good fit. There are a handful of IVF and fertility doctors here in Atlanta. I can't say that I've met with a lot of them. I did a lot of research on them. We went with Reproductive Biology Associates of Atlanta. I cannot say enough great things about them. They are known for being the top. And when you go with the top, you pay for the top. But my husband and I looked at that as like, you know, this is... Forget the house, forget the car. This is the biggest investment of our life. So this is what we need to do. And we made a consultation appointment. The doctor was great. He, whereas when we met with the regular OBGYN, she look of sadness on her face, like, you know, the RBA can help you, but it's going to be a long shot for you. Whereas when we met with RBA, they're like, I see this every day. We've got this. This is nothing. We've got this. That was wonderful to kind of have that burden lifted off and kind of feel like we have a plan, a plan of action. Before we jumped in to doing IVF, there's something called IUIs, intrauterine insemination. So basically, It's not as intense by any means. There's like practically no surgeries involved with IUIs. They just take the sperm, mix it in a cup with some kind of solution that helps push the fastest swimmers up, and they insert it. You literally are laying in a chair with your feet up. They set a nice little timer for about 15 minutes, and then once the timer goes off, you get dressed, you go on about your day.
Romantic, wow.
Very romantic. Right after it happened, I told my husband, and he was getting ready to go back to work. I was like, no, we may have just made a baby. We're going antiquing. So,
wow.
I made him go walk through some antique stores with me. I was like, this is not the story we're going to tell our kids.
No, not at all. Although 15 minutes might have been involved in either situation. That's all I could think about when you made the timer. I was like, someone's got to go there.
Oh, yes, man. Well played.
Yeah. So, Charlie, we've got one question in the comments.
Yeah.
Jen asks, were you nervous and what helped you get through everything?
Absolutely nervous. And on the very surface part of it, you are spending a lot of money. When all is said and done, I can tell you we spent almost $30,000.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very lucky that we had my in-laws to help pay for most of that. What if it doesn't work?
We
spent all this money.
Right, right.
I have all these scars. Like, what if it doesn't work? Could our money be well spent in adoption or fostering?
Yeah.
That was what went through my head, is because there's no guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like if we foster, if we adopt, we're guaranteed a kid. Like
we're
good people, you know, like we'll get a kid kind of thing. That was nervous. I was terrified of shots, of needles, of everything. I think a lot of people are. Now giving myself a shot, no big deal. Not
You've
a big deal.
It,
yes. Like it's just second nature to have to give myself a shot now. That was the financial aspect and what ifs.
Yeah.
And then the needles and all the processes that come after. I had just gotten full time at my job, and it was in radio. I was in Athens, and I wondered, I know this is going to take a lot of doctor's appointments, and we live here. My office is here. Doctor's over here. Was in Lawrenceville. They luckily had an office in Lawrenceville, but that was an hour away from my office. So there was a lot of, I'm going to miss work. I'm going to do this. Luckily, my boss, Pete, was wonderful and was like, whatever you need, we're here. We will make it work.
That's
awesome. Wonderful. Yeah,
we talked about before about how, I mean, in any situation with pregnancy and parenting, there's a lot of missed work days, and it can be nerve-wracking to feel like you have to ask, like, hey, I'm going to have to miss a few days here, or I'm going to have to, you know, leave early on this day to do this and that. And yeah, you're fortunate in that you had a boss who was very understanding, and that we both were kind of in that same boat on the dad side of things. It's, you know, that's not always the case, but I mean, you know, the advice that that I think that we'd give in that situation is, I mean, always ask, because it's important.
We're lucky. We work for a very family-oriented company.
Exactly, yeah.
And they get it. My boss has a kid that's a little bit younger than my oldest, he gets the family thing. He knows that sometimes I'll text him in the middle of the night, Parker's throwing up, I can't make it in, I'm sorry.
What can you do?
That's... just cover your shift. That's all I ask.
Right. And another parent would look at that and be like, huh, lucky me.
Yeah.
I'm not dealing with that.
Right.
Yeah. So I know we've gone through a good bit of a setup process, but I mean, we're still not even in there yet to the pregnant part. So like how much further along does the process go? What kind of comes next?
Yeah. So once you meet with the doctor, everything moved pretty quickly, but that was because we wanted it to.
Sure.
So once we did the IUI and that didn't work, we made our consult for the IVF. It's a completely different consult. It is like a panel of blood work. They had 13 vials of blood that they take to run different tests. You have to do genetic testing, things you don't even think about that they have to do. During that meantime, we didn't want to lose time, so we asked our doctor, "Hey, let's do another IUI while we're waiting for that appointment." He's like, "I appreciate your enthusiasm." He's like, "It's not worth it. Don't waste your money on that. Let's put it towards IVF." And so I appreciated his honesty of like, you don't need to waste your money, because he just as easily could have said, we'll do another
IUI.
Give me another couple thousand. Sure. So that was great. When you do the IVF process, it's very intensive, and it's very intensive on even your relationship. There are a lot of paperwork you have to fill out. You have to get notarized. If one of you dies, what happens to the embryos? Things you don't think about.
Never would have thought of that.
Right. If both of you die, what happens to the embryos? If you get divorced, who gets to say what happens to the embryos?
Wow.
And you have a lot of heart to heart, like, what are we going to do conversations? Mm-hmm. And then there's the, okay, let's go down the road of you have a kid, you have two embryos left. What are you going to do with them?
Mm-hmm.
Do you destroy them? Do you donate them to science? Do you do anonymous donation for other families? You have all these options, and you have to make them before they even give you your first prescription.
Oh my gosh. They're very intense.
It is. You really look at your relationship. So going through IVF is not something for the faint of heart by any means.
Sure.
It will test your relationship to the core for sure. From there, you kind of build a timeline of what you want with your doctor, and then you get the prescriptions. Our doctor was great. He gave us a lot of resources that we could use. There are a lot of programs that you can file because they understand insurance doesn't cover a lot of this. We have great insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Did not cover a dime when it came to the infertility medications and everything, and there are a lot of them.
I'm sure.
So you have to go to specialty pharmacies. You meet with and you fill out all these forms about your income, how much debt you have. It's almost like you're, you know, getting involved with IRS kind of thing. Like they want to know everything about you. It's almost like buying a house, like how you have to fill all that financial paperwork and everything. They want to see bank statements. They want to see what you're spending your money on. Are you a good candidate for this kind of thing? And there are some programs that will give you discounts. It's not huge discounts. I think the discount we got was like 5%. It helps, but when...
Especially when you compare it to the full number that it is.
Sure.
But
But when you need 10 vials of this, and this little epi looking pen kind of thing is $200, and that's only a dose and a half, it adds up.
I'm sure.
So you get all your medication, it's all shipped to you, and you have your paperwork of day one, day two, day three, and it's written out. They kind of make it dummy proof, which is great because you're doing a lot.
Yeah.
You're shooting yourself up with hormones that will make your follicles grow, so you have more eggs. It depends on your situation of what your issue is. I did not have an egg issue. Whenever they did my egg retrieval surgery, I had 22 eggs. When I got that phone call that they had retrieved 22 eggs, I flipped out.
Wow,
I was like, what am I going to do with 22 kids? Like, I'm not driving a bus. Like, that's not an option.
Right.
And the lady kind of laughed. She's like, let's see how it is in a couple days. I think she knew my greenness was showing kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, a lot of times we started with 22. When all was said and done, we only had six that made it. So you can see the disparity in the numbers there.
Some
people that don't have, I had another friend that had a numbers issue. I'm not going to talk about what her issue was, but a numbers issue. Mm-hmm. She only came out with three embryos that were viable.
Mm-hmm.
So every case is different.
Yeah.
Because of my endometriosis, my doctor was a little worried about the sperm meeting the egg and kind of doing what they're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually took our 22 and separated them into two Petri dishes, quite literally two Petri dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And they hand fertilized 11 of them.
Wow.
It's a thing.
Wow.
Like, science is amazing. So 11 of them were regular, just put everything on the Petri dish and let nature do its thing, and the others were hand fertilized.
Wow.
And the hand fertilized by far did much better. They think the shell, for lack of a better word, was harder. So it's harder for the sperm to break through.
Okay.
Just another thing that...
One of many things.
Yeah.
My gosh.
It's amazing what science can do.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and then I'm guessing what kind of happened next is out of those six that turned out great, one of them became the embryo that would become Parker.
Yes. So you can, right after the egg retrieval process, there is a few days where your body needs to recover and while the egg is growing, kind of the embryo is growing, and they can insert it then. There is a risk of hyperstimulation, so a lot of doctors will not do what they call a fresh transfer, which is when it's just a few days. Most doctors do a frozen transfer, which is what we did. So after the eggs grow about 3 to 5 days, they freeze them, and you are put on a medical regimen kind of thing, depending on what your situation was. They put my body completely in I called dormant stage. Mm-hmm. I actually was taking a shot that put me in menopause. I was having hot flashes. Wow. I mean, just the whole gamut of things. So I was like a 50-year-old woman walking around.
Right.
It was wonderful. it was great. My husband will tell you it was the best month of his life. While your eggs are frozen, you're kind of doing things to prep your body. My doctor noticed I had a couple of polyps in my uterus. He wanted to make sure the landing strip, as he called it, was completely clear. Right. Mm-hmm. So I had a D&C in between those couple of months before we did our transfer, where he cleared and burned everything out, make it smooth and mm-hmm. everything.
And D&C, for those who don't know, stands for... Didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, I can't.
Google it.
Yeah, Google it. It basically cleans everything out. It's a procedure that's most known when you have a miscarriage.
Okay.
That they clean everything out, for lack of a better word. Sure. And I cannot think of what it is to save my life right now, but that's what it's more or less known for.
D&C?
Yes, D&C.
Oh, okay. Dilation and curettage.
Yes, there you go.
Okay.
Yes.
I just didn't remember that.
Yeah, wow. The internet's a wonderful thing.
All the terms I can remember, that's the one I can.
No, it's fine.
We did that and waited another month and prepped the body for the transfer. The worst part of transfer day, when it comes, you're all excited, you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. You have to drink about 45 ounces of water, because the doctors have to be able to tell the difference between your bladder and your uterus and everything. And they also give you a Valium to kind of relax you a little bit. So you've had a lot of water, mm-hmm. you've got a Valium, you're all relaxed, your feet are up in stirrups, and I'm just like, hey, has anybody ever peed on you? Yeah. No, I did not, but I did ask. Uh-huh. And that's it. You go into a room, it's lights out, you are in a chair, there is a line in front of the chair, and my husband was obviously with me. Mm-hmm. He could not cross that line. The doctors come in, there's a nurse, and there is an embryologist who brings quite literally a test tube with like a syringe kind of thing on it, and that's where they insert it in, and then he takes it back, looks in the microscope to make sure the embryo's not there. Mm-hmm. So my husband likes to joke, there was two men and another woman in the room when we got pregnant.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
He loves to open with that sometimes. not appropriate.
His jokes are
before
right up
you
our
know
alley.
What's going on.
I know.
Yeah.
Don't open with that, people. And you sit there for a little bit, you wait, and then the worst part is the waiting. Mm-hmm. You wait 15 minutes, and then you can get dressed, go on about your day. And then you wait 5 to 7 days, and they will do a beta test, which is blood, to check for your HCG levels. Mm-hmm. It's the worst. Overread every symptom you think you have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think I've got a headache. I think that's probably a sign that my hormones are really high, so that must mean I'm pregnant. I'm going to the bathroom a lot. Does that mean I'm pregnant?
Uh-huh.
Like you overanalyze, and you're very tuned into everything, mm-hmm. and then there's those like phantom feels kind of thing.
Sure.
So you think you have all these symptoms that maybe you don't have, or maybe you do.
Right.
We were very, very lucky that our first IVF transfer took. And that's where we got Parker.
Wow.
My 3-year-old.
Yeah. Yeah. Fantastic. And then from there, it was pregnancy. This may be an obvious question, but once you're at that stage where you're pregnant, is it from there kind of, is there anything special you have to do because it was IVF?
My particular situation, yes. My doctor wanted to make sure my uterus was nice and fluffy, his words, not mine.
Okay.
So
wow.
I was constantly doing shots, and then there's also a type of gel that you have to insert. And I was doing that once a day for 16 weeks.
Oh, wow.
And then I was released. And that's another part of the IVF medications is you have to continue those drugs, and those things are not. I mean, the box of, I think it's 18 applicators was $400.
Gosh,
insurance, nothing.
No,
so it's and you have to do it.
Wow,
at the beginning you're doing it twice a day, and then they kind of wean you off to once a day.
Once a day, even that's.
But it's almost like, well, I know I've made it this far, but can I get by with just doing it once a day? You know, you kind of want to start playing your own doctor in the name of finances.
No, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's sad that's what it's come
it's
to,
real.
But it is. Yeah, it is. It's very real.
Huh. And you weren't kidding about all the shots you've had. I mean, you've probably had more injections in the past 7 years than Brandon and I have had in the past 25.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's been a lot. I didn't save all of them, but I did save a good amount. And I took a picture with Parker when she was 1 month old with a bunch of the needles. And I wish I would have saved all the needles and all the prescription bottles to have around her. Because you've seen those pictures that kind of go viral. And I just kind of wanted my own so she would know where she came from.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. It's very special.
Yeah. And it makes her story very, very special. Mm-hmm. Yeah. She is... She came in with a bang, and it was quite interesting.
Yeah, and Parker's a special kid. Yes. I've met her on a number of occasions. She's wonderful.
Thank you.
And so you've had one baby, IVF, and then you and your husband eventually decide, okay, we're ready for number two. At that point, did that come to mind first that we may need to take this path again? Did doctors tell you ahead of time that that would probably be the case?
It was, we just assumed it was the case. Yeah. We knew we had five more embryos on ice. So it was never like a conversation. It was just like, well, we're thinking about number two. We need to go make an appointment. Mm-hmm. We need to see where we are, what we need to do kind of thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't even an option of thinking we could get pregnant naturally. Wow. We did try.
Sure.
But nothing came from it. So we went ahead with another IVF transfer, and that was in February of 2018.
Gotcha.
And that was super exciting. I told you it was so easy, to get pregnant with Parker. Once we did all the bad stuff and all the intensive stuff, once we did the transfer, Parker took like that. So I was foolishly optimistic when it came to getting pregnant again.
Right.
And it was not the case at all. We did a transfer in February and nothing came from it. And that was a punch to the gut. Because I was like, what's wrong with me? Uh-huh. Like, obviously it's me that can't do this. Why can I not do this? And the doctor had said, you know, if it doesn't work this time with one embryo, maybe we think about two embryos.
Uh-huh.
So when that one embryo failed, my thinking is, oh my gosh, two? Uh-huh. With the hope that one takes, but that's terrifying. Mm-hmm. To think about, and you kind of start beating yourself up.
Right.
We were looking at moving, so we decided we'll wait a little bit. Let's sell our house. Let's move. Let's get settled. Mm-hmm. You know, whatever, and then we'll pick back up in the fall. It'll be fine. You just need to relax a little bit. We did another transfer at the end of September, beginning of October of 2018, and again it failed. And I took the day off from work. That once I got that phone call, I just needed to be home, and I needed to cry, and I needed to cry in private and alone and be mad. And it's still hard to talk about.
No, I understand.
You think that it's so easy, and it's not. Mm-hmm. And then you start beating yourself up. Well, my husband did his part. Like, it's fine. It's me. Why is my body doing this to me? Like, maybe I'm supposed to be a mom of just one child. Like, I want to, but that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided with the holidays coming up, let's take some time off. We're going into the busiest time of the year. Mm-hmm. We'll reevaluate in January with the thinking of we're done with this because each transfer is about $5,000.
Yeah. Wow.
So we've spent $10,000 and we have nothing to show.
Right.
So the thinking was when we pick back up in January, we're going to go down the adoption road. That's just where we're headed.
Wow.
And that was, again, October when we found out that it was failed, October 5th. The next month, found out I was pregnant. Well, I guess it was next month I got pregnant.
Right.
And we found out a few days before Christmas that I was pregnant naturally.
Naturally, yeah.
Naturally.
Like you can't
completely
make this stuff up.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And I've always been a little reluctant to tell that story because when you are going through in any kind of infertility, even if you don't know what's wrong with you, you're struggling to get pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
The thing everyone says is, oh, just relax. It'll happen. Try this position. Mm-hmm. Try this food. Everyone, just relax. It'll happen.
Yeah.
It is so cliche.
Mm-hmm.
And I hated hearing it. And it yet is the reason I have my daughter.
Uh-huh.
is we were not trying by any means to get pregnant, and it happened. It was very odd, and I don't want the eye rolls, but I also want people that have gone through this to know there is hope. Like you, there's hope. You can change your narrative a little bit.
That's amazing. I'm really glad that you told that story, because I assume that that's typically not what happens in the case of, in vitro fertilization or fertility journeys and all that. And yet it happened for you guys in kind of a miraculous way that you weren't expecting at all. I think it's such a cool story, but it's also, it just goes to show that there are a million ways to have a family. And
no wrong way.
We've talked before in the very beginning of our podcast, at the time we were talking about breastfeeding, because we were new families, and it's same situation. Everyone gives you all this advice, if the baby doesn't take, then try this, try that. Formula's best. No, natural is best.
Breast is best.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah. Everyone's. And so, what we came away with was, if the baby eats, that's best.
Thank you.
You know
fed
what I mean? Like,
is
what
best.
Works is fed is best, And I think that the same kind of theme applies here. You could say, natural is the best way to go. Oh, no, IVF is this, but you don't want to do that. If you get to a family, if you get the baby and you and your partner can raise that child, that's best.
Right.
No matter which road you take to get there.
Yeah. And it's all thanks to science that that I'm even here with a family.
Sure.
There is a, not even going to get into it, there is like a religious aspect of you're playing God making a baby that you obviously cannot do yourself kind of thing. And I just very politely just smile and bless your heart and just kind of go on about your day kind of thing.
Yeah.
There is no wrong way. You're absolutely right. It's just everybody's story is different.
Yeah.
And however you get to the end is fine.
Yeah, exactly. And, here you guys are now with two kids. You're awesome parents. Yeah. It's such a cool family. And it's all thanks to, like you said, science and then just something that came out of left field.
Completely left field. Completely left field, for sure.
Okay, so Charlie, I'm going to wrap up this conversation with just two questions for you.
Okay.
The first one is, and this is kind of a change of pace here.
Mm-hmm.
Now in the parenting mode, what is one kind of practical tip, or trick or toy or DIY hack or something that you might, that has worked for you guys that you might want to share with new parents?
Keep baby wipes everywhere. In your car, in your purse, in your back pocket.
Uh-huh.
Like, they make the little travel size that stick in there. Yeah, baby wipes everywhere. That is my number one tip. They're good for everything.
They really are.
Yeah. Another thing that has worked for us is having one-on-one time with each child. Kennedy, my youngest, she'll be 6 months this weekend. She doesn't quite get the one-on-one time, but the three-year-old is very aware of it. And I noticed when we first brought Kennedy home, it was a lot of, Parker, you're playing too loud, you got to be quiet, your sister's sleeping kind of thing. We did that a lot. And I noticed this look Parker was getting on her face. And I didn't want her to resent her sister. Like, she's the reason I can't play the way I want to play.
Yeah.
So we kind of stopped doing that and included Parker more and more and more in the Kennedy process of, you want to hold her bottle? Do you want to help me change her? Do you want to throw the diaper away? Whatever. Can you go get her toy? Like, whatever you need. So just including and making that one-on-one time. Parker and I are getting ready to go out on a weekend, like a little girls' trip this weekend. But regularly, we do little things like that. I'll take her to Catch Air where it's just me and her, and then we'll go to Chick-fil-A, or my husband will take her, out shopping and, just whatever. Just having that one-on-one time is important, because for 3 years or however many years, that child is your whole world. And she gets, or he gets, all your attention. And it's a shakeup to them too.
Yeah.
That as much as they love their sibling, it's a shakeup to them that they're not the center of attention.
No, I get it. I've only got one child now, but I know that when I was a kid, when my brother was born, I was a year and a half, and I was potty trained, but I regressed to diapers because I wanted the attention that he was getting.
Wow.
And I started to backtrack and kind of do some of the things that he was doing because I thought that that would get me the attention. At least I assume that was my thought process. I really don't remember.
It makes total sense. Yeah. And just including them and having that one-on-one time. We do a lot of things as a family, but then we also kind of make sure that Parker has her dad and mom dad time and then her mom time.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Because, I mean, that it is a huge adjustment mm-hmm. to go from being that sort of only child
center.
And sort of the center, mm-hmm. you know, of that universe to having to share that spotlight. And, you know, I mean, and every parent says, you know, you love your children equally. But for the kid, it is probably hard to understand why am I now having to share my parents with
right.
this newcomer.
Yes, mm-hmm. and it's not that you're bringing in a three-year-old that is a little independent. You're bringing in a newborn mm-hmm. that needs your attention almost 24/7.
Yeah,
so
we remember those days.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard for her to see me holding Kennedy all the time and feeding Kennedy. And it's like, why doesn't mom want, you know, to play with me? And it's like, well, I can't feed a bottle and play Barbies at the same time. It's kind of hard. Mm-hmm.
You multitask a little, right?
Yeah, that's one thing you get really good at as a parent of two.
Wow. Okay. And then my second closing question is sort of a two-pronged thing. Either what is the best advice you got as a new parent,
mm-hmm.
or what is something you wish someone had told you at the beginning?
A little bit of both. There is this, I don't know if you guys are country music fans. I'm a big country music fan. There is a Darius Rucker song called It Won't Be Like This For Long.
Mm-hmm.
And that song plays in my head almost every single day. Everything is a phase. I've been complaining, Jesse knows, lately. My almost six-month-old, is up in the middle of the night babbling. Like, she's found her voice at 2, 3 a.m. It's
uh-huh.
a beautiful voice, but not so
any
much at 2:30,
yeah,
3 in
yeah,
the morning.
Yeah.
And the sleep regression. And it's frustrating that, like, I'm having to get up in the middle of the night and I'm so tired to rock her, you know, whatever, feed her again. It's like, you know what? This is not going to last that long.
Mm-hmm.
I remember
mm-hmm.
when my husband would drop Parker off at daycare and he would, you know, text me, gosh, she was screaming, crying again. I had to get the teacher to pull her off my leg so she would go into daycare.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about that song. And a few months later, he texted me. He's like, she didn't even notice I was there.
Right, right.
I'm like,
right.
I told
the opposite.
It hurts both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever you're going through, and I think that's kind of like a life lesson. Whatever yeah. you're going through is a phase. And it's, especially with kids, it's not going to last long. Think about it. You only get 18 years, which
yeah.
seems like a long time, but it's really not. They say the nights are long and the years are short.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's never been more true in my life.
That's amazing. And I think that advice works in two ways. It works great in one way when you've got those sort of sleepless nights where you're stressed out and you're like, mm-hmm. oh my God, is this going to be my whole life? Just
yeah.
never sleeping again. It doesn't last forever. It's
right.
not going to be this way forever. So that's sort of light at the end of the tunnel. But mm-hmm. also it's a reminder, savor these memories while
yeah.
they're here because
mm-hmm.
they're not going to be this small forever.
Right.
And there are going to be new phases. And, you know, the hard part of that is not getting to, you know, saying goodbye to the old baby, you know, as it turns into a new toddler and a new
mm-hmm.
child. I think that's awesome advice.
Thank you.
So once again, Charlie, thank you so much for joining us in the studio today. I think our listeners, I mean, for sure, Brandon and I got a lot out of this. I think
yeah,
our
great.
Listeners did, too. You know, for anyone out there who is exploring fertility options, you know, if you are trying to get pregnant and having trouble, you know, hopefully you can take a lot of this, not just as advice for what to do, but sort of reassurance,
mm-hmm.
you know, that other people have gone through it. And there are many different ways it can go. But it's something that's, you know, that's worth exploring. And there are hard times, but there are going to be hard times no matter what you do.
Right.
And there's, you know, that wonderful reward at the end of it. So, Charlie, sincerely from both of us, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for coming on. And thanks for just bringing admittedly, like, positive message through something that's incredibly challenging.
Very challenging.
Like, just
but,
listening
yeah.
to the story, like, I think about, you know, the pregnancy that we went through, and Jesse, I know you were as well, and just like none of us would describe it as easy. You know, we are thinking about how difficult it is, and then we hear another story, and
mm-hmm.
we're like, we can't even imagine
yeah.
your situation either. And there's nothing about comparing, but it's
no.
just being the dads in the situation. We like to hear these pregnancy stories because it's the side of things that we're never going to get to experience
right.
in that particular way.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own way of experiencing
mm-hmm.
the pregnancy, but it's not the same. There's just things that we're not going to be involved in. So just thanks for being incredibly brave and going through the process and sharing it. So I don't know. I just, you know, I think we know some people who this applies to more directly. And even if it doesn't, it's still just a great story to think about the like power of perseverance and like just, you know, maintaining through the situation with your partner and just kind of making it through. It's tough.
Yeah.
Parenting is tough.
That's exactly what you do. You just make it through. Mm-hmm. That's really all you can do. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right. So I think that's where we are going to close today. Thanks again to Charlie for joining in. Once again, if you are in Atlanta, you can catch her on the air on B98.5 Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to, I want to say, 2 or 3 p.m. So thanks again to her. And Brandon, between this week and next week, where can our listeners find us online?
Please give us a like or a follow on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram at Dadsplaining Podcast. You can check the Facebook Live of this episode and every episode there as well.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to reach out to us directly, you have a question about today's episode or anything of that nature, dadsplainingpodcast@gmail.com, direct line to us. And then you can catch this episode every week anywhere you get your podcasts.
Exactly. Next week is going to be an interesting episode. We are actually going to be guests on another podcast. Recently, we had a guest on our show, Brittany, who is the host of the Growing Our Family podcast. She has invited us to join her on her podcast to talk about parental leave, which is something that we both had experiences with. It's an important subject for both of us. So hopefully we'll have some enlightening things to say and not make total fools of ourselves in the process.
Yep.
So you can check that out next week. And until next time, I'm Jesse.
And I'm Brandon.
And hey, Brandon, what do you call a cow that works out a lot?
A buff bull. I don't know.
Shredded beef.
Excellent.
That's courtesy of the Reddit subreddit Dad Jokes. Thanks again, folks. We'll see you next week. The advice and opinions expressed on Dadsplaining are solely those of its hosts and guests and should not be substituted for the advice of professionals. If you have a serious concern about the health or development of your child, please consult with your pediatrician. If you're experiencing an emergency, please call 911. Don't listen to us. We're really just good for dad jokes. If you're enjoying Dadsplaining, you might enjoy this other podcast from our friends here at WSB Radio.
Like current events and want to be the smartest among your friends? Then the Power Pod is the show for you.
The Power Pod is a weekly recap show where we cover the current events of the week.
It's a show where we're not afraid to get serious.
And we're not afraid to have some fun.
So try us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, the WSB Radio app, WSBRadio.com, Stitcher, CastBox. Okay. Anywhere there are podcasts, we are there. So power up with the Power Pod!